A new article published in the Chronicle of Higher Education called How Iowa Flattened Literature is Ruffling Feathers in Iowa's Writing Community. Today, we'll explore the claims made in the article. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The article points to evidence that the Iowa Writers' Workshop received money from the CIA through a third party in 1967 and goes on to critique the work and influence of the workshop. This hour, I'll talk with the author of the article, Eric Bennett, and some people with very different perspectives. Christopher Merrill, director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa, will be here, along with writers Seth Abramson and Edward Delaney. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This week, an article published in the Chronicle of Higher Education has been making waves in Iowa's writing community and beyond. The article titled How Iowa Flattened Literature, with the subheading, With CIA Help, Writers Were Enlisted to Battle Both Communism and Egg-Headed Abstraction, The Damage to Writing Lingers. This article points to evidence that the Iowa Writers' Workshop received money from the CIA through a third party in 1967 and goes on to critique the work and influence of the workshop. And with me this hour is the author of the article. Eric Bennett is an assistant professor of English at Providence College. He's also the author of MFA versus NYC, The Two Cultures of American Fiction, published this month by Faber and Faber. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Charity. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here today. And we've also, of course, invited some people with very different perspectives on this hour as well. A little bit later in the hour, we'll bring on writer and blogger Seth Abramson and author Edward J. Delaney, who've both made serious study of MFA programs around the United States. And with me in the studio right now is Christopher Merrill. He's director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. Hello, Chris.
Nice to see you again, Charity.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. And Eric, I want to start with this headline grabber. This is the information that seems to grab people's attention and has sent your article all around the internet and all around the world already. The assertion that the Writers' Workshop received CIA funding in 1967. Can you tell me about that claim?
I can for sure, and I'd like to clarify, the article doesn't say, and it's not my sense that it's the case, that the Domestic Writers' Workshop ever received CIA money. Paul Engel received one check, I'm assuming it was one check in 1967, from a thing called the Farfield Foundation, which was a CIA front, and that was for the international writing at Iowa, which was just starting up then. In that year, journalistic expose of CIA funding of cultural programs and subsequent congressional investigation put an end to the activities of the Congress for Cultural Freedom, which was the body that the CIA funded. And I assume that as soon as that initial bit of support arrived in Engel's inbox, the whole thing kind of collapsed. So the article makes use of that CIA connection to suggest really the kind of intense national function that the Iowa Writers' Workshop performed throughout the 50s and 60s. And it came at the tail end of the kind of initial expansion of the Writers' Workshop. And it has a certain sexiness in terms of conveying the national importance and the international importance of writing at Iowa, but in some ways it's a symbolic detail rather than a kind of underlying conspiratorial force.
It sounds like you're backing away from the claim.
Oh, I'm not. Paul Engel received money from the Farfield Foundation, and that's the CIA.
All right, but you don't know whether he actually knew that that money was from the CIA?
I don't know that. But he sends a letter back from Paris in the mid-60s, and he has reconnected in Paris with an old Iowa alum whom he doesn't name, and is excited that the Congress for Cultural Freedom, in Paris has been doing many of the same things he's been trying to do as an international ambassador of writing at Iowa. I'm very curious who the Iowa alum he meets with in the mid-60s in Paris is. I think it's probably a man named John Hunt, who I'm in the process of trying to find out more about. It's speculation. Engel was canny enough that I wouldn't be surprised if he knew. I'm not sure how much he would have cared. He was just a terrific fundraiser, and his vision was really a pure vision of getting the world to people in the world to talk to each other and to do it through literature.
Well, in your article, you do make it sound as if this was more of a plan of Paul Engels. I mean, you describe him as a do-it-yourself cold warrior whose accomplishments remain mostly covered in archival dust. So in your research about Paul Engel, did you uncover this idea that he was battling communism through the writing program at the University of Iowa?
Absolutely. He makes a fundraising pitch in 1959 to various businesses throughout the Midwest, emphasizing the importance of bringing writers from other places to the United States to form a positive impression and send them back again. In a grant application to the Rockefeller Foundation, a few months later, he invokes the founding of the university in Moscow and the need for the United States to respond in kind, and that's mentioned in the piece in the Chronicle. But a cold warrior in 1945 or 1955 is a very different thing in his own heart from a cold warrior in 1967, or maybe not in his own heart, but in our public estimation of him. And part of the larger story I look forward to telling is the kind of transition from a 1950 sensibility to a 1969 sensibility. And in some ways, Engels' vision perseveres as the dynamics of history change. And it's not exactly – that aspect isn't necessarily tragic. But it's really curious to compare the early part of the Cold War and to the Vietnam years.
I want to pause right now, Eric, and I want to bring Chris Merrill into the conversation. Chris Merrill, of course, is director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. This funding that is at question in this article was used to found the International Writers Program at the University of Iowa, which is separate from the Writers Workshop. Chris, I know that this accusation that the International Writing Program received CIA money has already created a huge response in your community. What is your response?
Well, I would just say that Mark Twain said that a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth, while the truth is putting on its shoes. And in the day of the internet, an article like this, which is filled with innuendo, which is filled with speculation, as the professor has just suggested, can cause a great deal of damage. Just to give you some ideas, someone in a blog yesterday noted that, oh my gosh, Iowa City, UNESCO City of Literature, funded by the CIA, we should be exploring that. Paul Engel, as Professor Bennett remarked, was a remarkable fundraiser. In 50 years of raising funds for the Writers Workshop and for the International Writing Program, there seems to be one grant that may have some connection to the CIA. I would say that he probably wrote something like 50,000 letters to people, businessmen and farmers and professors and insurance companies and Rockefeller Foundation and the Henry Luce Foundation and every foundation on the planet, trying to get money to bring writers together in Iowa City, not to fight the Cold War, but to highlight commonality among writers, to bring people into closer conversation, to exchange ideas, to engage in this wonderful thing called the creative process. That's what writers do. And I'm afraid that what Professor Bennett has done is to make our lives very difficult. We have writers who come to the IWP from complicated places around the world. They go home to their countries and they get interrogated oftentimes by the authorities saying, did you have any connection? Did the CIA approach you while you were there at Iowa? Well, now it's all over the internet that because of this article, there's some connection to the CIA, which at best is tenuous. I would imagine Paul Engel met with somebody in Paris. Who knows who it was? But in a scholarly article, do we spend our time speculating? I think we're actually supposed to try to get facts. That's what scholarship is. We have no idea who he met with. We know he met with somebody whose ideas were similar to his about bringing people together. The Congress for Cultural Freedom funded everything from the Paris Review to the Sewanee Review to the Kenyan Review to all kinds of conferences, all sorts of things. Did people know that it was connected to the CIA? Some people might have. I would imagine Paul Engel didn't know, and I'm sure he didn't care. What he saw was, here's somebody putting out some money to bring writers together. That's a good thing.
Chris, can you, for people who aren't familiar with the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa, can you lay out the mission of the program?
Our mission is, I'm always saying, only connect. The great line from the British novelist E.M. Forster. We bring together this last fall 34 writers from 31 countries, often from pretty dicey places. We've had writers from in the days of the Cold War, there were writers here from the Soviet Union. In the days, as soon as relations were established between mainland China and the United States, we started bringing Chinese writers, one of whom won the Nobel Prize 2 years ago, Mo Yan. We bring writers together so they can write, so they can trade impressions and ideas, so they can have those kinds of frank exchanges that bring people closer. Winston Churchill said, it's always better to jaw-jaw than war-war. And that's what we do. We bring the writers together. We have them jaw-jaw. We always, almost always have writers from Israel and Palestine in residence at the same time. They almost always argue like crazy on political matters, and they almost always become friends. Now, is that something designed to advance the goals of the CIA? Not at all. That's just common human courtesy, bringing people together, seeing what we can create.
This hour, we're talking about a conversation started by an article that was published in the Chronicle of Higher Education this week. The article is called How Iowa Flattened Literature, and makes a claim that the International Writers Program, when it was founded, received some money from the CIA through a third party. Director Paul Engel received that grant. We will talk more in just a few minutes. I have the author of the article, Eric Bennett, here with me today. He is an assistant professor of English at Providence College. He's also the author of MFA versus NYC, The Two Cultures of American Fiction, published this month by Faber and Faber. Also with me in the studio is Christopher Merrill. He is the director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. If you're interested in seeing this article for yourself, of course, you can go to our Facebook page and find a link, and we'd love to hear your thoughts as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're having a conversation inspired by an article that was published in the Chronicle of Higher Education this week. The article is called How Iowa Flattened Literature, and the subheading is, with CIA help, writers were enlisted to battle both communism and egg-headed abstraction. The damage to writing lingers. The author of that article is Eric Bennett. He's an assistant professor of English at Providence College, and he is here with me this hour. We've been talking about that claim that there was CIA funding at the beginning of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. With me also is Christopher Merrill, director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. This claim has really created a lot of waves in his community and a lot of fear on the part of individuals who participate or consider participating in the International Writing Program. And Chris, I know that you do not have a relationship with the CIA in the International Writing Program. You do have a relationship with the State Department
of
the United States. Can you describe your relationship?
It's a terrific relationship, and it goes back to the beginning of the program, back in the days when we had a U.S. information agency. Now we work at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and we are part of that larger policy rubric known as cultural diplomacy, which is the exchange of people and ideas and information. And there's a bright red line between what the State Department does and what the CIA does. The Church Committee meetings back in the mid-70s, which came out of the recognition of the abuses that the CIA had made in all kinds of areas, from political assassinations to covert action to the Congress for Cultural Freedom, they said, we've got to make a distinction here. So if once upon a time, maybe in the 50s or early 60s, the CIA might use a journalist as cover, well, that made it dangerous for every American journalist. And so what's very clear is that if you have any whiff of a connection between the intelligence services and what we're doing in cultural exchange, you endanger everybody. And what the success of our program depends upon, artists and writers and musicians and dancers and the best of what we imagine to be American civilization going out into the world, using their expertise, exchanging it with people in all kinds of complicated places and all kinds of audiences, but doing it knowing that they're relatively safe. They're not going to be picked out as people who are stooges for the CIA. That's the danger of this article, is it makes an innuendo. It makes a suggestion that that's what we've all been engaged in, and it's patently untrue.
Eric, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that. Is there something you'd like to say?
For sure. I have a few things I want to say. First, I just wanted to note I'm not the author of MFA VNYC. I have an essay in there. It's a book edited by Chet Harbach.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't think there's innuendo in my article, and there's certainly the speculation when I make it, if I make it, is up front. There's definitely a sheet of paper in the Paul Engle papers that lists the Farfield Foundation as a sponsor. But I also want to say I couldn't believe more in what Paul Engle did throughout his whole career, and I couldn't believe more in what Chris does, and I definitely would not want the present-day International Writing Program to be tainted as a CIA front. But I also really have to say that Paul Engle was a do-it-yourself cold warrior, and there wouldn't be any other way you could construe the archival evidence. And his relationship with the State Department starts early and is pretty strong by the early 60s. There's a State Department person named Richard McCarthy, whom he corresponds with about state of political conditions in Asia and what writers he might approach and how he might go about it. And really some of the most touching letters in the archives are McCarthy's State Department dispatches from Vietnam, to which he's transferred in the mid-60s, just wishing that what is going on in Vietnam could be replaced by the kind of diplomacy that Engle was about. So that kind of work of having international literary activity in the sake of peace, Engle really believed in, and I know that Christopher believes in it. And when Averell Harriman nominated Paul Engle for Nobel Peace Prize in 1976, Engle and his wife, I think it was deserved. But Engle's activities throughout the 50s were geared toward contrasting an American view of reality with a Soviet view of reality, and that in my book makes him a cold warrior.
I do want to engage a few other people in this conversation, and you are welcome to join us at 866-780-9100. I also want to move on to some of the other things that you write about in the article, Eric. But before we do that, Dave is on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. This is a question for Christopher Merrill. Mr. Merrill, do you know that if this is probably, as you say, innuendo, do you know of any other monies that are coming into the program from that time or now from the CIA or any other national security agency?
No. And that's the thing. This is one grant out of 50 years. And, you know, and I have – it says for the Farfield Foundation, for all he – for all Paul Engel knew, it was the Congress for Cultural Freedom. Who knows how much he knew what connection that might or might not have to the CIA. But, you know, we manage in a given year about 15, 16, 17 grants. They come from we work with cultural ministries around the world. We work with private foundations. We work with the State Department. We work with a lot of different organizations. And, you know, part of what we do and part of what the UI Foundation does in its fundraising is due diligence to make sure that the money is coming from appropriate sources.
Dave, thank you so much for your call. And, of course, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. Today, I'm talking with Eric Bennett, who's the author of an article published in the Chronicle of Higher Education, How Iowa Flattened Literature is the name of the article. And also with me right now, Christopher Merrill, who's director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. I also want to bring now Seth Abramson into the conversation. Seth is a graduate of the University of Iowa Writers Workshop. He's also a blogger and a lawyer, and he has for many years done rankings of MFA programs. He's currently a PhD student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Hi, Seth.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I wanted to bring you into the conversation, but I also want to give now Eric a chance to continue to talk about what he wrote about in the article. And one of the things that you write in the article, Eric, is as you come back to – you were a student at the University of Iowa Writers Workshop. Years later, you come back to do research about Paul Engel, and you find yourself digging through all of these archives doing all of this research, and you write that you wonder about your motives when you're coming back to do that. What are your motives?
I'm so much more interested in talking about what I've found in the history of this program and in MFA culture in general. But I will say that I had a sense that the conception of literature at Iowa when I was there could have been more expansive and definitely more concerned with broader patterns of thought and less concerned with individual sensation. And it's the history of those things that I really tried to root out. And when I talk about the Cold War influence on the writing workshop, what I discovered was that the strident affirmation of the individual and a kind of repudiation of Marxist ways of thinking in the 40s and 50s played a large role in the creation of a MFA culture in which the five senses are extremely important, starting with the individual and basic elements of experience are crucial, and it's quite difficult within the prevailing pedagogy to address big ideas. And I do think that's the legacy of the kind of purging of Marxist consciousness from American intellectual life that happens in the 40s and 50s in the U.S.
Now, when you came to the Writers Workshop, you were 23 years old. And, of course, not every workshop, not every MFA program works for everyone. You did not particularly enjoy your time.
I love Frank Conroy, who features as a character in my piece.
That doesn't come across in your piece,
to
say.
I have to jump in here, Eric. Your portrayal of Frank Conroy is sneering at best, and you make very clear your feelings, it seems, in the course of writing this piece.
Frank did some sneering himself, and I think we had fun sneering at each other, and I tried to capture that, and I'm sorry that it didn't read that way to you.
Well, Eric, let's talk about, you know, your headline, which is How Iowa Flattened Literature. I mean, what do you feel the impact of the Writers' Workshop and this culture of the workshop, as you describe it, has been on literature in the United States?
So I have a quotation from 1937, and it appeared in American Prefaces, which was a journal that was edited out of the University of Iowa by Engel and Wilbur Schramm and Norman Furster. And it says thought to the writer should exercise itself less, at least in the early stages of his development, with the problems of society at large than with the problems of the development of his craft. The literary left has been reproaching the writers of America for the last 7 years, since 1930, for their deficiency in social consciousness, their lack of sympathy with the underdogs and the oppressed. But the propaganda element in all good writing, though it may exist, is subsidiary to the theme itself and to its implications, and these are given by experience and by feeling for experience, and not by any abstract political or social theory. So you get that same sentiment in creative writing handbooks in 1980. You got it in the creative writing classroom that I occupied without the connection to American Marxism. And that's what really struck me, a real reluctance to engage heavy-duty ways of thinking and collective or communal ways of thinking instead of solely individualistic sensation.
So beyond your experience in the classroom at the Iowa Writers' Workshop and your feeling that there was a lack of openness to different kinds of creativity, how do you feel we see that as a nation of readers?
We as a nation of readers?
Right. I mean, as I mentioned, the headline, How Iowa Flattened Literature. I mean, your claim is that this influence at the University of Iowa in the Writers' Workshop has gone far beyond just the writers at the workshop to create a culture of literature in the United States that you feel is lacking somehow.
I think the point of my critique is that even writers that we all respect tremendously are part of a system that has somewhat low expectations for itself. And there are, of course, enormous exceptions. I studied with Marilyn Robinson when I was at the workshop, and you couldn't find a more synoptic or profoundly learned thinker in this country, and her fiction has gone recognized. And so there are certainly shining lights in literature now, and I think my study attempts to get at a kind of demotic mediocrity or a kind of middle ground in which I think just expectations could be higher, and many, many teachers of creative writing and students of creative writing could have a bolder sense of what they were about than simply writing concrete sentences about sensory experience.
Well, and I want to bring Seth into the conversation now. Again, as I mentioned, he's made a study of MFA programs and for many years done rankings of MFA programs in the United States. Seth, how would you like to respond to that?
Well, Charity, I'm glad that you've mentioned several times the title of the article, How Iowa Flattened Literature, because I think actually, despite the sensationalism of the claim of CIA involvement in the funding of the International Writing Program, the real reason that I think this has really spread around the internet is that Professor Bennett's article is making an argument that I think a lot of people want to hear. When you read that title, How Iowa Flattened Literature, the assumption is not that we're talking about the International Writing Workshop or people who have graduated from that workshop and gone to write abroad. I think the assumption of the people who spread around this article was that we were talking about literature in the United States and that the word Iowa was being used as a euphemism for the Iowa Writers' Workshop, which, as we pointed out, is already known to be, by everyone listening to this program, a completely different institution with a different history, different physical plant, different administration from the International Writing Program. So I guess what I would say is what strikes me most is that as novel as Professor Bennett's claims regarding the CIA scheme, the apparent ambition of the article as a whole in the Chronicle of Higher Education seems to be to discredit the discipline of creative writing by scapegoating it for bad or just unambitious writing. And that particular argument is a very old one. That argument goes at least as far back as 50 years ago when the New Critic Alan Tate wrote a famous essay called What is Creative Writing? And the problem with that essay, and I think 50 years later, the problem with this essay, is that efforts to discredit the discipline of creative writing in that way usually require misinterpreting important facts about the history of creative writing. And I think that's what's happened here with this article.
Well, and Eric, I know we need to let you go here in just a moment. So you get your final word on this. When people read this article, obviously a lot of people have taken a lot of offense, and a lot of people question your motives in writing the article. What was your hope? What do you want people to take away from this?
So it's what I just said, which is not a discrediting of MFA programs, but encouragement to look at what a tremendous thing they could be. Here you have universities with extremely dedicated students and teachers, and
So can I jump in, Eric?
Yeah.
And just say then why is it that in an interview with the paper at Harvard some years ago, you said that Harvard shouldn't have an MFA writing program? That in fact you really don't believe in the whole enterprise. And if people can't be ambitious at Harvard, where are they going to be ambitious?
Well, that interview reflected my experience as an undergraduate at Harvard, where the literary culture through the Harvard Advocate was just so dazzling and wonderful. And that, in combination with a fairly belletristic approach in the lecture halls, it felt like training for a creative writer. And I think probably those experiences as an undergraduate at Harvard, where the professors weren't talking about show, don't tell, but the longer movements of literary history and the beauty of language, not just since Anton Chekhov, but since Chaucer, that gave me a sense that you could use a university to produce writers in a really terrific way without making it a degree-granting program.
Eric,
since we have so many up and running, and since I had a very good experience at Iowa in some ways, why not reform them in that direction?
We are out of time, but Eric Bennett, thank you so much for being on the show today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we've been having a conversation inspired by an article published in the Chronicle of Higher Education this week. It's called How Iowa Flattened Literature. And we spoke, of course, with the author of that article, Eric Bennett, a moment ago. I want to turn the conversation to something more constructive. We have picked apart the points that Professor Bennett made. I now want to turn the conversation to talking about the world of MFA programs in the United States and the place of the Iowa Writers Workshop within that world. With me still, Christopher Merrill, director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. Seth Abramson is here. He is a writer and a blogger. He attended the Writers Workshop at the University of Iowa. He's currently a PhD student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and has for many years done rankings of MFA programs. Also joining us now is Edward J. Delaney, an author, documentary filmmaker, and journalist. He's also a professor of creative writing at Roger Williams University. And his documentary film about the short story writer André Debussy premieres in August of this year. Hello, Edward.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to ask you, Ted, you have also done quite a bit of study about MFA programs in the United States. And so I'll start with you, trying to put in perspective where the Writers' Workshop at the University of Iowa stands with regard to these other programs.
Great. Yeah, and I will preface this by saying that, you know, I've looked at Seth's rankings. They're very thoughtful and detailed, and he does them on an ongoing basis. When I did the piece for The Atlantic, that was a few years back, where it wasn't intended to be a ranking per se. It was really just to open a conversation, and the conversation really ended up being, where are the hotbeds educationally of American fiction? It was for The Atlantic fiction issue, so we spent a little less time focused on poetry. It was interesting as I went around and talked to people, because I was listening more so than I was trying to assign value. And what I found was there were probably 40 creative writing programs in the country that were absolutely certain they were in the top 10, another 20 that probably thought they were in the top 5. But there seemed to be a compelling consensus that Iowa was and has been number one.
All right. And Seth, do you want to weigh in on that as well?
Well, sure. Obviously, I really appreciated the work that was done in The Atlantic to listen to what people were saying at the individual programs. I think as far as ranking MFA programs, it's really just providing hard data to prospective applicants of these programs regarding program offerings like funding, student-faculty ratio, you know, things like that. I think the more interesting question is whether the discussion of MFA programs in the U.S. right now, as typified by Professor Bennett's article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, really flattens MFA programs, you know, beyond all recognition. Right now, there are 235 such programs in the United States. Creative writing is the fastest growing discipline in the United States. And my doctoral research has really focused on the history of creative writing as a discipline. And what that research reveals is that not only is Iowa an idiosyncratic program, which really can't be used as a microcosm for creative writing generally, but also all of those 235 MFA programs are really so different in terms of their curricular structure, their internal atmosphere, their history, their mission, that we really can't take the anecdote of either myself as an Iowa Writers Workshop graduate in poetry or Professor Bennett as a graduate in fiction as representative of what creative writing is or what it can be for literature in the United States. And a lot of, you know, hard data about the history of creative writing comes with that observation. But I think that's the most important point, is that we shouldn't flatten MFA programs in making the argument that MFA programs have flattened literature.
Well, and Chris, I know that you have some thoughts about this as well, although the International Writing Program and the Writers' Workshop are two separate entities. But this does really seem to be a time where MFA programs are flourishing all over the United States.
Yeah, and I think that Iowa is shorthand for creative writing programs. I've been in conferences in other countries, and it always feels as if Iowa is the elephant in the room, and it always feels as if it's a way of saying we don't like creative writing programs. But the fact is that artists have to learn their craft. Musicians have to learn how to play. Dancers have to learn how to dance. And as one of those interesting wrinkles in modern history is that writers started learning how to write in creative writing programs in universities. It's just a part of the grand imaginative effort that people are engaged in all around the country and now all around the world. So the shorthand of Iowa is useful for those who want to take a swipe at really all imaginative expression, but it's not very smart.
Well, and I mean, let's go back to Paul Engle. When Paul Engle was working to build up the Iowa Writers Workshop and fundraising and also marketing the Writers' Workshop. I mean, he was a machine for getting the word out about what was going on at the University of Iowa. In many ways, really set the stage for these other MFA programs.
Exactly, as Seth just pointed out, they've all gone in their own idiosyncratic ways. That's the nature of creative expression. That Iowa does it one way. The University of Washington, where I took my degree, did it in a different way. And I actually like talking to writers from different workshops to see how they do things, because there's so much imaginative work going on in devising new ways to think about how to serve a literary apprenticeship.
Well, and Ted, as you look around the world of MFA programs, now it strikes me that many of the newer ones are more highly specialized. When a student is looking for an MFA program, do they need to search for one that fits their style?
I'd say absolutely. One of the nice things about MFA programs is that the people with whom you will be studying are writers who have, you know, their work out in public. You can read their work. I you know, if someone loves the work of the wonderful George Saunders up at Syracuse University, they might be happier studying with him. Or up the way from me here in Rhode Island, Brown University has a tremendous and very interesting, I guess what I would call an experimental program, always has prided themselves on that. There are all kinds of people all over the country. You know, there was a time, I suppose, when because Iowa essentially invented the game and has had primacy because of that, maybe they had to be a supermarket as opposed to a boutique. But I think there are lots and lots of programs out there that are doing great stuff. But one thing I will throw in is that there's also a commodification of MFAs, because it's also a teaching credential. And for people who go to Iowa, if we all concur that Iowa's number one, that's going to leap out on a resume or a CV because it's perceived as the best. I mean, ultimately, the writer's true qualification is the writer's work. I mean, it doesn't matter where you got your MFA in the end if you're looking to be recognized as a writer, but you have to also have a full-time job, and teaching does that. And so I think that an awful lot of people go looking at these programs in that combination of, number one, will I become a better writer? But number two, is this good on a resume for a teaching position? And there are so few positions, tenure-track positions, compared to the number of people coming out of these programs, I think it would be foolish not to give that heavy consideration.
Well, and Seth, I was just going to ask that question. Do you think that the prestige of Iowa leads people to try to get into this program, even though it might not be the right fit for them?
Well, I think that's almost certainly the case. I think the danger in this situation, in terms of applying to MFA programs, is the danger that we see really across education, which is conflating writing style with teaching style. We think that we know how someone will teach, how they will be as a mentor, because we've read their novels or we've read their poetry. And often students arrive at an MFA to find that that's something of a foolhardy assumption. I think it's this conflation of teaching style and writing style as being somehow related when they might not be, that allows Professor Bennett or Mark McGurl, who recently wrote a highly publicized book called The Program Era, to simply look at individual writers who taught, for instance, at the Writers' Workshop in the 1950s and 1960s, and say the fact that these writers were there tells us what the mission of the institution was. And my research has found that that's usually a misinterpretation of the data. And I think that's the case with Iowa in particular. People look at the roster of who's teaching at Iowa now, and they think they know something about exactly how the program is set up. They perhaps would read Professor Bennett's article and think that it's a very directive program, particularly on the fiction side, when in fact Iowa, its motto from its founding in 1936 has been that writing can't be taught. And in terms of its curricular requirements, it is the most I don't know how to sort of say this in the right way. It has the least curriculum, I would say, of virtually any MFA program in the world. And students come here and experience that. And when I was there from 2007 to 2009, that was the primary concern that students had, is that there wasn't a lot of structure at the Writers' Workshop when just looking at the anecdotes they had read about regarding people who used to teach there, they assumed there would be a lot of structure. So that would probably be my main message to any applicant, is don't conflate writing style and teaching style. Really investigate the internal atmosphere of the program.
Well, when you say writing can't be taught, then that leaves a lot of us who haven't gone to an MFA program thinking, then what is the point of an MFA program, Seth?
Well, I mean, the other part of that maxim that Iowa has functioned under for decades is writing can't be taught, but writers can be encouraged. And that is definitely the perspective taken at Iowa, which is we're going to give you as much free time as possible to read, to write, to talk in an intimate setting with other poets and writers, you know, even talking, of course, across genres. And then if you wish to seek out outside the workshop setting your professors for one-on-one conversations, you can do that, although that requires initiative. At the University of Iowa, whereas there are other programs that definitely take the view that writing can be taught, and they actually have very detailed, intricate curricula that involve literary study, that involve foreign language education, and this is not to say that one approach is better than another, but really just to echo what Ted has said, which is that you really have to investigate the curriculum of the program and look beyond simply where Iowa is seen in terms of prestige, or who teaches there, or even its history. The fact that I like to give to people is that it actually took 28 years after the Writers' Workshop was founded in 1936 for any other university in the world to start an MFA program. So when Professor Bennett said in his article that Iowa kicked off the boom in MFA programs, the reality is that Iowa is idiosyncratic, and it took decades for other universities to consider how they wanted to approach the discipline of creative writing, which actually originated in the 1880s at one of my other alma maters at Harvard University. So I think that's what I would say, is that there's a lot of complications here in terms of the complexion of these programs, and it really does go beyond the personalities associated with them.
Well, Chris, I see you nodding your head a great deal. Is there something you'd like to add to what Seth was saying?
Seth and Ted, I love what you're saying. I agree with everything you're saying. And it just makes me laugh that yesterday I was trading emails with Marilyn Robinson about this. And she commented that if we had so much CIA funding, why do we spend so much time in Quonset huts with roofs that were leaking? And we didn't have money for fellowships for so many years. So it's, you know, it started slowly. And what Paul Engel in the workshop and so many graduates created really was a groundswell of interest and enthusiasm that then expressed itself all over the map. And we have, as you say, now 235 creative writing programs, which descend in part from the Iowa model and have, in the nature of all creative activity, gone in a wide variety of ways.
Well, it strikes me that the position of the Iowa Writers' Workshop is obviously a very strong one. There is so much prestige. There is so much history to this organization. There has been a great deal written about the Iowa Writers' Workshop, both positive and negative, by people who have graduated from the workshop. But the Writers' Workshop itself is not in any kind of danger. But Chris, it sounds to me from what you said earlier that the International Writing Program is more vulnerable to critiques like the one that we talked about today.
Well, it's not so much that we're vulnerable to the critique as that the spreading of falsehoods about the CIA and a connection that just simply doesn't exist will cause problems for us as we travel around the world and as we bring writers from complicated parts of the world into our program. That information is out there right now, and one of the reasons I was happy to come on the air this morning was to try to correct that record, because Professor Bennett simply got it wrong, and that needs to be said as clearly and as plainly as possible.
Rumors do travel fast. Is this something you can correct, do you feel?
Well, I don't know whether we can correct it, but I will certainly keep speaking out as much as I can.
Well, and Seth, with looking at the writers' workshops, I'll let you have one of the final words today, at least looking at writers' workshops, exploring the history of writers' workshops and ranking them as you do. Can you, again, characterize, Ted was saying, you know, Iowa comes out on top, although there is so much mystique about the Writers' Workshop in Iowa. Can you try to put it into perspective for us as far as almost the mythology of the workshop and what it means for people who want to come here?
Well, I think if I was asked to address the mythology of the workshop, I would probably find myself running as fast as I could in the other direction and actually saying that the experience of being a poet, which in my case, that's the genre that I practice, is a very, very personal one. It really goes beyond prestige or rankings or mythology. It goes to one's experience of information and data and the world. And I can tell you that when I went to the Writers' Workshop in 2007 as a non-traditional student, 30 years old, one of the greatest benefits for me is that Iowa is the fourth largest MFA program in the world. And so I suddenly found myself in a really diverse community of 100 other fiction writers and poets of all different ages, all different backgrounds. But at the same time, as I mentioned, there was this curricular flexibility to sort of just let me do what I wanted and choose my own path. So I do think that historically Iowa will always have this mythology. But the nice thing about creative writing is that it really always does come down to the individual. And all these other things are in the air, and we think about them in terms of the history of these programs and my research on the history of creative writing. But in the end, it's you and a piece of paper or you and your keyboard or you sitting in a room with Marilyn Robinson or another mentor and having a real human exchange. And I think that's, if you ask me for my final word, that would probably be mine.
Seth, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Seth Abramson is a Writers Workshop grad. He's also a blogger and a lawyer. He's a PhD student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Edward Delaney, thank you.
My pleasure.
And Chris Merrill, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Edward J. Delaney is an author, documentary filmmaker, and journalist. He's also a professor. And Christopher Merrill is the director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa. Ben Kiefer's here. What's coming up on River to River today, Ben?
During the noon hour, during the Sochi Winter Olympics, we want to take stock of U.S.-Russia relations. Also ask about yesterday's state dinner at the White House honoring the French president, the first state dinner in 2 years. Just a couple of the little appetizers on board for our noon hour.
All right. Thanks a lot. River to River at noon.